My name's Robin. I'm a host of a radio show called Ink Studs out of Vancouver. It's also online.
I hear a word from Vancouver.
Today's panel is called Comics and Social Media. Here, I'll read out the blurb so I remember what I'm talking about. Is comics a solitary pursuit in creation and enjoyment, or can there be community sharing support and all of the headaches that come with it? And what happens when it comes time to get away from it all? Join creators James Sturm, Ray Fox, Rich Stevens, Kate Beaton, and Jeff Rowland. Hi, guys. To hear what they have to say about using social media and, I guess in James's case, shutting it all off.
Did you know, did you predict the order? Or did you make, is it written in that order?
I think we actually sat down. No?
Okay. I said what order you guys are in.
All right. Oh, okay.
That's James. You're Rich, right?
Yeah.
That was quietly blowing my mind.
Yeah, I was like, maybe you have made a case for no internet with ESP.
I thought that maybe that's like Final Destination and that's the order that we're going to die in.
I can't. Oh, no, you're going to see my dead, bloated corpse.
Finally.
Well, on that note, I guess... It's a kind of, I guess, a conceptual idea panel, comics and social media. The big thing that stuck out to me is the idea of community and what community means in context for the majority of you guys. That, I guess, means the internet. Am I, if I'm wrong, something's wrong with me.
The Twitter.
The Twitter and the Facebooks.
Well, no, the Twitter is plural. The Twitters.
The tweets?
Yeah, the Twitters and then Facebooks.
It's more than one book.
MySpace.
You just have to ignore whatever
this
face.
There's a lot of...
See, I don't know Rich, so I'm getting to know now.
There's a lot of non-canonical Facebooks.
And I guess, in James, and with you, that's not a factor right now. Maybe... Are you guys familiar with James doing right now?
Well, I'll talk briefly about it. First of all, I love the internet. The course I wrote in on, I had helped start a college, the Center for Cartoon Studies. Impossible to happen without being online all the time for many years. I think what happened for me personally is I just developed an unhealthy relationship with my love, and we decided to have like a 4-month hiatus. The internet, seeing a lot of other people. I'm not seeing anybody else right now. Cut my cell phone. And I think what was happening to me was I felt I couldn't reconcile making the type of work that I wanted to make with the kind of addictive behavior I was exhibiting with the computer and internet. And I didn't quite know how to integrate that back into my life. Or I was abusing it, so I thought taking 4 months off would give me a chance just to step back from it after... 7 years of like intense networking and building an institution, so that's what I'm doing for 4 months. And in a way, the experiment's somewhat of a failure, to be honest with you, because I thought, well, it is well feel like to be cut off, but I had a new book come out, so I'm not really cut off. I have a publicist getting me, interviews and people calling me for podcasts and things like that. I have a platform like Slate, which is reaching a lot of people. If I wrote my address that people can write me. So instead of having a virtual inbox, I've gotten well over 100 letters in 3 weeks of handwritten notes. So I don't really feel all that cut off. So I think really I might have to do this again when I'm not blogging about it. And
but how do you know what the weather's like if you don't have the internet?
Yeah, well, that's why I'm so underdressed for Toronto.
What if it's worse when you come back?
It's funny because I had the privilege of going to the McDowell Colony for 3 weeks. It's an artist colony in New Hampshire. And they, you have your own studio. You don't have the internet in your studio. You have access to it at the lodge. And they bring you a lunch every day. And I thought, oh, this is going to be such a weird adjustment because I'm used to having children, dealing with kids, students, and board members, and all that stuff. And boy, I got to that the first day. I was like inking my panel, and I was just in there like 100%. And the hard part was going back to the normal life. years grinding. So I am a little, I'm very trepidatious about
that
going
sounds
back.
Like, sounds like someone coming out of prison.
Wait, so like not being in internet in prison is what you're saying?
Yeah, and then having to come out to the regular world and then you just want to go back to prison so you commit a crime?
I reverse those two polarities. It's funny. Like, I feel like being free from the internet in a way, I feel like I have my old life back. I feel more empathetic and a little more grounded. So, I don't know.
It's like not
each his own.
What if the inmates are not being kept in prison? What if we're being kept out?
And we were dead the whole time.
Wow. I don't know where to go with this metaphor. But sounds interesting.
For you guys, the rest of you, what has the web meant as far as you're getting into comics and developing community? Like, I know Kate.
Everything.
Yeah. That just kind of...
Yeah. It just sucked you right in, didn't it? Basically.
And you were on WordPress so long, too.
Pardon me?
You were on WordPress so long?
No, I was never.
Live journal.
No, I had a website and a live journal at the same time since I began, but my website used to be really bad, so no one ever went there. And then I fixed it up last year. It's been everything for me. Without it, I wouldn't be here right now. It just I got started because friends of mine told me to put my cartoons up on the web, and I wasn't really expecting that much, but it got passed around a lot until I had a very large audience kind of quickly and unexpectedly, and was able to make a career out of it, which is extremely nice. And I don't think I would have had the balls to go at it in print or by myself. I just people stumbled upon mine, so that's I owe that to the internet. But I can understand definitely having too much of that every day and feeling kind of addicted to it, I guess, is what you were saying. It's just sort of taking away from your regular life.
I'm curious for you guys, how many of you, in your own getting into comics, was it strictly internet? Did you read print comics, web comics, and in creating comics, did you go to school at all for any kind of art stuff?
I kind of, this is going to sound, I think, a little embarrassing for me, but I predate the internet as far as creating comics goes.
Cheer back.
This is the old man and the disciple.
Somebody likes me. No, I photocopied things too, but thank God there's an internet.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. I think I'm on this panel as I think I was just saying I'm the moderate coward. I love what happened to comics because of the internet as far as the explosion of creativity because creators like Kate and like Rich just put their stuff there and there's a giant audience for it that I personally have encountered a vast number of editors who I think would have shot them down immediately if they had attempted to be published through any media route. The way they shot me down. At the same time, I'm vaguely horrified by the internet because I didn't start there.
Did you see that guy?
What was the gesture?
No.
I'm vaguely horrified by the sort of the system of communication, the way it's different than what I'm used to, and the way there is no real setting. There's no real etiquette for the net as far as I'm concerned. So I have a problem where I want to post stuff and I do and I love it and I post a whole bunch of stuff and then people start replying to it and then I leave for a couple days because I can't take it. So I think it takes a certain kind of person to be really successful on the internet. I think it takes a person who is very comfortable with the system of communication on the net.
A person that's comfortable with seeing distended anuses.
Yes.
Well, maybe I should preface and just state that
we're internet people.
Yeah, maybe some group talk.
That's not assumed.
Throwing that out there. I agree with that.
Everybody does on the internet. Like, I don't know what strip everybody does.
Oh, okay.
I'll let them say themselves because I know Kate, I know Rich's, and I know James.
Sure. I just like to add before that I agree with you that it does take a certain type of person to be successful on the internet, because there is that extended communication that you kind of have to have with your audience. And in print, the barrier between a creator and their readers is pretty far. They can work in their basement all the time, and there's that image of the cartoonist as this, like a Seth-like character who's always in the basement, as he always describes himself, working, by himself and not having to really interact with the people that read his comics. But on the web, it's totally different, because they'll find your email, they will comment on your website, there's this total access to the creator that is almost, they feel like almost they deserve that, and that's part of the deal. And
you're entitled.
What's that?
They're entitled to email.
Yeah, they're
all
entitled
caps
to email.
Every time you make a
typo. Excuse me!
It's like, watching you grow so fast has been the first good case for a filter or a barrier that I've ever seen, like in my personal experience.
How so?
Just, I don't like the way people treat you. You know?
It's I'm a woman.
Yeah, that's too interesting. So,
whatever it is, it's creepy.
You want me to start?
Yeah, let's start.
Okay, so I am Jeffrey Rowland. I started making comics online in 2000.
No, you're before me. I was 2000.
Okay,
you're 98
so I actually
or 99.
Started in 99. Yeah. And
I don't think I had a computer then.
Yeah, they were just invented. I wanted to be syndicated, but then I was like, because using Dilbert as a model, thinking that okay, this guy can make a bunch of money from this, then
he
certainly
has burritos.
Can. Yeah, he does.
Yeah, Dilburritos.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So I put my comics on GeoCities in 99. And let's see. Then 9/11 happened and changed everything.
Not here. Not in Canada.
But, not in Canada.
No, we now have these passports get in the States.
Yes.
So I can just quickly say that, like, using the internet thing changed my life, because, like, the reason I moved to Massachusetts, because I lived in Oklahoma, which is horrible, and I moved to Massachusetts because my friend Rich here, who I met over the internet, and we both made comics, lived in this little, like, this old factory building in East Hampton, and I was like, this has got to be better than Oklahoma, so...
Yeah, even in my closet, you were better off.
I lived in this closet for, like, 2 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a really big closet.
But the only reason I wound up in Massachusetts was because that's where the Ninja Turtles are drawn.
Right.
No, and all that money in the 90s when I was in high school funded a museum.
Yeah.
So print comics pulled me there, and then the internet pulled you there.
Yeah.
And now, like, half of the internet...
They still live there.
Yeah. East saw them the other day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Do you got Kate? Introduce yourself quick.
Yeah. Well, when I went to them, my name's Kate Beaton. I make a comic called Hark a Vagrant. It's mostly historical type humor, and it's on the internet.
Hi, I'm Rich. I draw Diesel Sweeties, and I was brief. I do. It's a web comic, but I was briefly in newspapers, which was probably the biggest mistake I ever made.
I'm Ray. I do actually mostly traditional books now. In 1999, I attempted a dramatic online strip called The Talkers, and it went nowhere. I think it had about 20 readers, and I learned a few lessons from that.
My name's James Sturm, and I do, I guess, we call graphic novels now. And I should probably say, if I was coming of age right now as a cartoonist, there's no doubt that I would be having a webcomic and cutting my teeth in that form. When I went to the University of Wisconsin way back when, I had a daily comic strip. And I think that sense of community that a lot of you seem to find on the internet, which I think is just vital for creators, you should sustain a creator's trajectory and keep at it, is incredible. And I, before there was the internet, I helped start The Onion and The Stranger out in Seattle. And I love being in that, I never liked the basement studio, but I like that hermetically sealed space to create work, but I also felt a real need to be part of a more vital community, and, you know, I found that in the newspapers and now, in the real community of White River Junction, Vermont. And I think the feedback that, I guess I won't talk to Seth for Seth, but for myself at least, I think we really like that feedback. I think maybe not at the barrage or the pace that, you know, one feels they have to make that contract with their reader. Because I feel if I was kind of getting that every day on every line that I wrote, it would
just affect the way I thought about my work and how I would approach my work. And I start maybe reacting more than reflecting. And so.
No, that's totally true. I agree with that. I mean, when you're a web creator, the comments come in from all sides. They come in your emails, underneath posts, on your Twitter, people trying to talk to you on Facebook, people just trying to find you anywhere and talk to you. And
seeping in.
Seeping in. Yeah. I'm standing
outside your bedroom.
Do you feel your obligation to your readership will...
No, you're not...
Not diminish, but as you go forward, or do you feel... It's,
no, it takes you a while to realize that you're not that obliged to them, that you don't actually owe people anything, really, for giving them a free comic that they read. And I don't mean that in disparaging terms for the audience, but when, say you first start a comic online and you get all these comments, you do feel really obliged to take heed to everything because people are talking to you and you've never had that before there, this intense communication from readers and being affected by all the negative things and creeped out.
Well, you kind of miss the whole like message boards thing because like in the early 2000s, like everybody had a huge message board and we had like communities kind of built around. I actually ended up riding around Adelaide, Australia, with one of the creators of The Wire because of my message board.
Yeah.
two of my readers got married actually because they met on the message boards like back in the day, and they paid for me to come to their wedding, and I didn't know at the time that like the girl's dad was Ed Burns, the co-creator of The Wire.
He was telling me that's how they could afford to fly him to Australia.
And I didn't know about it at the time, so we're sitting in like the back of this rental car and he says, yeah, we're working on this show called The Wire. It's like, oh, that's great, I make this comic.
How do you balance yourself? Like, you touched a little bit, Kate, is how do you kind of remove yourself from that, too? Because, I mean, you guys, majority of you guys, are very active online, you know, constantly promoting your stuff in different formats, Twitter, BlogJournal.
Sure.
Zanga. Mevo.
I use Flues.
Vibe.
How do you kind of remove yourself from the internet? Does it ever kind of get overwhelming, or are you able to keep a part of your life personal? Or do you care to?
I can say that, like, I mean, I draw my comics on paper because that's pretty much the only time of the day that I'm not looking at a screen.
Do you refresh the paper a lot?
I try to sometimes. I like mess up a line on like Control Z. Why does this work?
Do you ever like open the Bible and hit Apple F?
I try to
figure out where God made the earth.
I looked at a phone book the other day. I was like, "What is the point of this thing?"
distancing yourself. I think that there comes a point for everybody where they do get overwhelmed, and then after that, you just sort of deal with it. You learn what to ignore and what to take in, because there's a lot of positive things and a lot of great things about the communication that you get all the time, but you have to put your work first and not let it be all about that. And not everybody who does a webcomic is that visible. I mean, the three of us are fairly visible people when it comes to our work. We have the Twitter accounts and all that stuff, but you find someone like Chris Homestead, who does Akewood, and no one even saw a picture of that guy until like 2 years ago or something, and no one really knows anything about his life because he doesn't put it up there, and he has a very successful comic online.
What do you want to know? I'll give you the folder.
But I mean, it's possible to keep it very private if you choose to. I think that a lot of people who start about comics from one thing are very young and a bit naive about everything, so they don't choose to keep it very separate. They're very excited that people are reading what they have to put out there, and they want to talk to everyone. And 5 years down the road, they're like, sick of this shit. Everyone knows everything about me. Yeah, maybe.
It's impossible for me to get away from it. I mean, because this is like as away from the internet as I get right here.
I guess I lucked out, and I never used my first name, so nobody knows what to call me by, and. Mm. So you combine that with just, you know, using Twitter only to tell jokes, and you can be online all the time and be very private.
Yeah.
I ignore just about everything. I have a sort of philosophy that if I'm going to accept and take in to myself the compliments that people pay me, then I have to accept and take into myself the nasty things people say. So I pretty much don't really take a look at anything that isn't personally addressed to me from someone I know.
James.
Aww. Yes.
I know. Interesting for me is I'm finding out more about you because you're off the internet.
But he's not.
Yeah, you're right. I'm not.
I didn't know anything about you at all until I read all those articles.
Yeah. Which is, no, it's fair. Yeah.
I felt so horrible for you.
Well, I will say that a lot of my experience is reading webcomics or seeing, I work with a lot of young cartoonists or people applying to school or even tooling around. There's so many people that the social aspect of webcomics and putting stuff out there is more important than the work itself. And I would say at least the large majority of the webcomics I look at, boy, these people would benefit from just not maybe unplugging their computer, but just working on their craft for a while and then putting up something. I think that would probably increase one's social network as opposed to thinking like there's the right kind of web party to be at and that will get you readers in the kind of cart being in front of the horse more often than not.
Well, I'm curious how within your own work has the internet affected your growth as an artist? Like, have you been able to kind of learn from other folks, get feedback, critiques? I know you avoid.
But I do actually, I pay close attention to the work of artists I admire, and I appreciate it very much when they post things like works in progress and such, right? I think that's a great learning experience. I think that's a lot where the strength of the internet is this sort of global window. You can look in on anybody who wants to show you something, and it can be a great, right?
That used to be really expensive to get to see, too.
Yeah. It's if I want to see... There's a thing lately where a lot of painters I really like are posting their works in progress, and that actually used to be impossible to see. It wasn't even that you would have to go to a far-flung gallery. It was that you would have to get to know the artist and be allowed into their studio, right? So that sort of thing, definitely. I definitely have learned a lot on the internet, and I appreciate what I can see there.
Any of you guys want to?
To be really honest, the main thing I use the internet for with work and writing, I mean, I write, I take walks and write, write in the shower. Like, you just let your brain go and do it. But I really love using the internet to make sure nobody's used a joke before. I call it beating Google. If I can do a 3 or 4 word phrase, which is not too weird, and nobody else has done it, kind of feels good. Like, you feel good posting that comic,
I always buy the domain names. I have a problem with buying domain names.
I have I want to know 40. The domain names. I've been bothered this weekend.
But I have awesomeninja.com is my favorite
but
one. And buttermyhole.com is a favorite one.
And how
they just
how
redirect to other
these,
people's comments.
Yeah. Owning these domain names helped you as an artist.
They all kind of they forward to either the store, topotico.com, or my comics, or you just write them in a bathroom stall.
I think that there's two ways people go about the
grassroots
online comic thing. And you, James, were talking about people who put their comics up and don't work on their craft as much but are interested in the community. And I see that a lot. I get a lot of emails from people that are like, how do I get involved in the webcomics community? Which is not a very good question because...
luckily, that's kind of a path to failure.
Yeah, exactly. But that's exactly it, right? You see, there's so much content online, and the people who rise above it are the people who actually care about their craft. So that you see that a lot, but in the end, those comics go kind of nowhere because they're not good. They're not working on it. They're not getting better. Their jokes are bad, and their art is bad, and they're interested in being part of this because they see a lot of people see creators like us with friends because we've gotten to know each other, and they kind of want in on that, and it's.
Like it's a formal organization.
Yeah, as if it was. But
that wasn't our goal. This was never our goal.
What's funny with that is that attitude is very similar to the how many comics do I post on my site before I can make how many T-shirts do you think I should order?
And this will be my job too.
It's like they make the people who overuse the internet, I think, make the comic as a vehicle for their own ego, as opposed to people who just have to make a comic.
Then I wonder if it was the same with zine culture when that was a big. deal. It was, you know, I was never involved in that. But everybody, you know, being like, you know, I'm going to be in a zine culture to make a zine, but it was no good.
But they couldn't Twitter every single step of the process. True.
Found a staple.
I also think, too, the type of intent as a cartoonist, I think what some of your work, it harkens back to like 100 years ago comics of doing, or doing, being a daily comic strip where you are reacting to the world immediately, mm-hmm. and you're it's much more comedic and humorous, and it's more ephemeral.
That's the goal,
like a newspaper, and I think that the internet is maybe, you know, even a more well suited medium for that type of work, and for myself, who's doing more like these long form pieces where I'm doing draft after draft, it's not the right place to figure to work, because it affects a little bit differently. So it, you know, it's, we're coming at the, you know, our intent as creators are so different, no better or worse, of course, but. And I think that really affects the relationship with the internet as well.
Well, actually, I think the net is built for punchlines, and it's funny because I think about 15 years ago, a lot of people I knew were complaining that comics weren't very funny, and now there's this perfect medium for really funny comics, because a lot of people who read stuff online, a lot of people seem to be looking for something that's quick and amusing, and they can pass to their friends.
But you can almost make it in real time. Which is the cool part.
Yeah.
You
know. Well, I've done both. I'm still doing like an ongoing like story comic called Wigu, and it's been going on since 2002. But I realized in 2004 that there's only a certain number of people you're going to get, like if you have a humongous backstory involved and like getting current with the story. So that's when I started like doing a daily gag comic called Overcompensating, which was kind of to keep people's attention, because everyone on the internet has like the attention span of like a flea. Hmm? Mm.
I find that Wigu though also is punctuated by dramatic punchlines. Like it's like you've got the same timing, right? Except it's just dramatic and it has a backstory.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, over like a 3-month period.
How does that affect you as a storyteller, having an expectation of having to have something more frequency? Like, I know for James, like, you take quite a bit of time with your work, so you don't have the expectation. For you guys, like, people are like, okay, it's been a week, I need a new comic.
A week?
Oh, yeah. I gotta go.
No way, man, every day.
Yeah, yeah.
Try every day.
Yeah, it's, I don't understand the question. Sorry about
that. Well, the how does people's expectations affect your own work? Like people wanting stuff sooner, immediacy, right away. Give me comic.
Oh, sure. That entitlement.
You have to build up a callus to get all caps emails.
Well, I'm not thinking of necessarily the entitlement part, but as a creator, when you are like doing these smaller pieces, mm-hmm. are you able to flesh out bigger ideas too?
And that might not even be important to some people. I mean, was that important to, you know, Dilbert Creator or
Snoopy?
Yeah. I mean, there are certainly bigger themes in some of the better comic strips.
But you know, if you're doing small things every day, like it's almost a meditation. Your bigger themes are going to get hashed out if you're honest and you're not just, you know, jerking around at parties trying to become Kate's friend. You know, like if you do your own work, the big stuff will bubble up.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? That makes sense.
It does make sense. Yeah.
You know, like, you know, yeah. Charles Schulz was depressed, and look at
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Made a life of it.
Yeah. You're approaching your work as, you know, as a professional, and you're honest with it. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
It's like your ongoing fear and love affair with robots.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping that maybe if we put enough work on the internet and tweet enough, people will be able to, you know, retroactively psychoanalyze us. You know? Just by analyzing the data.
I'd much rather read your comics about robots than if you decided to do a meaningful story about this and that and the other thing, because it wouldn't ring as true.
Well, I was going to do one where everything was a giant religious quest.
Rich draws really well, though. You guys are missing out. Like, you don't draw enough on paper. I think.
I'm holding that out.
Yeah. I think that we're talking about two. Balancing two different things here, I guess. Maybe if you wanted to do serious and heartfelt work and felt that you needed to make jokes. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, I'm like, just wondering, because like
Because it is hard to juggle those different things. If people are used to seeing jokes from you all the time, and you're like, all right, guys, let's get real.
Yeah.
And you make a serious comic, and they're like...
But hopefully those things aren't mutually exclusive either.
No, some people can carry it off very well. Some people can't. There are a few comics that I read that every now and then are like, now let's get dramatic, you guys. And then you go, well, you can't really do that as well as you can jokes, so maybe you should.
It's because you set up an expectation, then you almost betray people, you know?
Yeah, a bit.
Yeah, it's like.
But then some people are extremely talented and can juggle all different types of storytelling. So.
But that was almost a trope in the early 2000s, where people make a gag strip. We all work at this internet company. And then suddenly there was this evil quest that had to happen, and the entire thing would change. Remember that? Like, it was like this disease. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, I think actually very serious statements do come through, like, in all seriousness, in a lot of the humor strips. They just, they're just delivered humorously, and they don't have to be long form. I think one of the most serious things that I've seen lately in any humor strip is actually occasionally, Kay, when you comment on being a woman creator and how people respond, right?
Yeah, that gets a different
response. Those hurt, man.
Why aren't you making me a sandwich?
Why? Yeah.
Where'd you get those shoes?
If I make comments about that, I'll get a lot of thank yous from women because they work in male-dominated fields as well. And then from men, they're like, "You always whine about this."
Why are you always nagging?
That is a sort of a serious statement and a kind of overarching theme that appears in your work, but it isn't like you're not writing a 40-page
No, I just comment on it sometimes because it is a big deal.
It's not like your Kathy Guy's wives.
No,
that almost
she's done so much for him. Sweat drops.
Yeah. That almost goes back to when you were working in the oil fields there.
Yeah,
I felt like you were like talking to us because otherwise you're just surrounded by these working men with mustaches.
Yeah. I worked in a. The Alberta oil sands for 2 years, and there was a lot of, you know, there was 50 men for every woman, and it was pretty intense. So that helps me kind of deal with the internet things, because there would be you know, some big dude being like, hey, what are you doing later on, and like really close up, and then you get an email. You get an email from someone who thinks they're being intimidating, but you're just like, I dealt with this already.
I looked up this guy's nose. There was a man with a pickaxe hitting on me earlier. This is
sticks and stones.
It has, with the internet being used within comics so substantially now, has it created more of an egalitarian community?
No.
What do you mean?
What does that word mean?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Egalitarian, like you have more opportunities for men and women.
Oh, definitely. There used to be a lot of women in comics panels at these sorts of things. They don't have them anymore because they're really annoying. I've never felt hindered because of my sex on the internet at all, in terms of, you know, good work is good work and it stands out. People don't read my comics because of my gender, and they don't not read it because of it.
People read my comics because of my gender.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, you're an entitled male.
Caucasian?
No, I've
male
had to...
American.
I've had this conversation with other lady comic creators, it's just good work. That's what gets passed around.
I don't actually think it's more egalitarian than before. I just think we're seeing a shuffle in what's considered elite.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
I just think that previously what was elite was the people who had the right stuff or the right maybe physicality or whatever to get past editorial. Now I think that the elite has more to do with people who can appeal to the most people online.
Yeah, or appeal not, to slices.
Not, yeah, slices, yeah. Not necessarily the most
Or maybe
people.
Appeal to the most
enthused appealing to the most people
online
is, you know, mm-hmm. some of the worst comics.
Well, your audience is your editor now.
In a sense. Your audience and your own sense of crippling guilt.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're doing good comics, you're going to have a bigger audience. And if you're doing crappy comics online, then you're not going to have a good audience. Like,
well, sometimes, though, if you do crappy comics, you'll get an even bigger audience.
Draw, like, dragons having sex with cars, you'll have a really big audience.
But I guess the reason
it's true.
Don't look it up.
I guess things to consider is, you know, is it more egalitarian? Maybe it's more egalitarian for people with constant access to computers.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's more organic.
Yeah.
Like, there's less gatekeepers, maybe?
Yeah.
And the gatekeepers have no training or qualifications?
Are there gatekeepers?
Yeah. It's like just the meta mind, you know, like the groups.
Oh, there's Cory Doctorow and...
Every now and then, you kind of really wish that you had an editor, though, looking back on the older work.
That's something I wonder about, because, I mean, when you do comics online for so long, I'm sure your GeoCities site's probably gone, isn't it?
Yeah, it's gone.
I'm sorry.
Good riddance.
Do you keep up old work? Do you kind of want to be like, okay, that was old me, that's done?
No, it's there. It never goes away.
You can't take it down.
Shames you.
Google already did it.
Yeah,
they did.
Google won't let you take it down.
Yahoo.
Jerks.
Also, someone will save it. You know, I delete an old comic or an old thing, and then, like...
You see a convention sketch you did for somebody 10 years ago, you know, like when you were hungover, and they posted out their blog, and you're just like, oh my god.
Someone yesterday was describing a comic that I drew in 2000, and they were like, oh yeah, this guy saying this, and I was like, oh god.
What did it mean?
Why did I do that? It's like, I'm so sorry that you had to see that.
I think it's a good thing, though. I mean, one of the most recognizable patterns in people doing webcomics is you get to see their progression from being not very good at art and writing. And
good enough.
Good enough, yeah, exactly, compared to what they are now.
Yeah.
Into very professional work. And that's got to be an inspiration for anybody. And it was for me. I looked through several comics from the beginning to the end, and you see people get better, and that lets you know, in a way, you know, I can do this, I can get better, and all it takes is constant work.
James, I'm curious how CCS, the cartooning school, uses the internet.
Well, I mean, we have a lot of students who do webcomics and are interested in webcomics. You know, I think whether you're doing your comics online or anyway you do it, it's like the fundamental principles of clarity and drawing well or good design or
storytelling
or even beyond that. I feel like one of the goals as a teacher in working with students is just to get them intimate with their own creative process. Mm-hmm. We have these great visitors every week that come in, and Charles Burns can say, you know, here's how I do it, and you could grab your brush and, wow, that doesn't look how Charles Burns does it, you know? And by having everyone from people who do webcomics come in to Marvel Comics to stalwarts of, you know, Trudeau or whoever, you know, having all coming out from all these different places, I think eventually people realize, like, I have to figure out how it makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. And ultimately that's how somebody, I think, grows as an artist.
Do they come in with similar expectations for what they're going to come out with, you know, where they're going to put their comics, what they're going to do?
I think that changes over time. I feel like what's hard with a...
Would like one class, say, you know, the class of this year, you notice that they all kind of want to go the same way, but that could shift?
No, they're all going in different directions in terms of what they hope, you know, like some are just doing webcomics, some diary comics, some more literary comics. But I think what happens is you kind of... have a sense of who you think you are, okay? Like, all right, stick with me this for a minute.
Yeah.
Have a sense of who you think you are, and then if all of a sudden your mom calls you and said, you know, your dad wasn't a Brooklyn Jew, he was a Palestinian Sultan. And all of a sudden, like, these like, building blocks in your past get rearranged, and it's like, oh, who am I? And I think those building blocks work forward to, like, you have a sense of who you think you want to be. Like, I want to draw for Marvel, or I want to do a webcomic this way. And that kind of fundamentally shapes your identity as much as how you conceive yourself as the past. And it's really hard to, like, change that goal sometimes. And what I witness over and over again is students who, like, wow, I can't draw in this way, or this isn't me. And they go through these really hard periods where they have to kind of move some futuristic blocks of what they aspire to be. And that fundamentally just changes your identity as an artist. And this happens frequently, and they cry in my studio when they come visit. No. But it is an intense thing for a young artist to kind of figure out, you know, who I am. And I think one of the things at the school we try to do is you know, show a lot of different people doing a lot of different things.
Yeah.
That's a neat metaphor, because all the people I knew when I was young who have failed were unable to change what they thought they could turn into.
Right, so they just feel they're a failure because they didn't live up to this.
Yeah, yeah, you yeah, see they, a lot of that stubbornness.
Yeah, and they just do the same thing over and over again.
And it is stubbornness. Start wearing like furry suits. Extent or yeah. I don't know, cowardice is maybe too harsh of a word. But
well, yeah, people get set in certain ways and they're like, this is what I'm doing, and you know.
It's all I'll ever want.
Yeah. I love you. Just the. It's a rational fear of failure.
Yeah, yeah, and I hate people who are like, well, I feel they should be doing something meaningful and artsy, or somebody, or the opposite, like, you know.
What is that?
Like,
they're not poop jokes.
Right. Like, I think the only opinion that matters is your own. Yes, and I guess this gets back to this thing of having your audience be your editor is like the scariest thing in the world for me to hear, because, you have to be your own editor. You have ultimately people. I mean, there are people I show my work to, and I enjoy their feedback.
But what if you suck?
What?
But what if you suck?
Well, again, I feel like that's okay too. I mean, if this is meaningful work that you're doing, and you're not that good at it, but you derive a certain pleasure and satisfaction. I see like parents, my parents' friends, like who spend. God, over the years, thousands of dollars on golf lessons and belonging to the country clubs. And are they ever going to play at the U.S. Open? Yeah, no.
Someday they're going to be able to sell T-shirts.
But
based on their golf.
They enjoy tennis or whatever it is, and they're willing to invest in it, and this is the whatever gives them a peace now.
But that's a hobby. I mean, those are hobbies.
This is a lot of hobby comics these days.
Well, yeah.
It is, yeah.
I don't know, I guess, do you have to earn... I mean, I guess, what's your litmus test or bar that you have to achieve in order to feel legitimate? Is it a certain amount of hits? Is it an income?
It's different for everybody.
I don't think that none of us, like us three anyway, intended for our comics to be our jobs, really.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I was testing things out to see what I could put in books, because I finally had a job and I could afford to print books.
Was it a calling or a career, I guess, is the...
Just a mistake.
Or, I mean, they're mutually exclusive, but... No, are you sure you want to be a cartoonist? And you try to dissuade people sometimes.
What else can you be?
Well, I worked in... I mean, I had a job like as a contractor for the government for like 7 years at the time I started making comics, and that 7 years every single day was exactly the same. Like, it's like lost time. It's really weird because but every day I've been a cartoonist has been new and challenging, and
there was that one time the FBI was after you.
It wasn't the FBI, it was FAA.
I'm sorry.
Investigators.
I like your comment about legitimacy. When do you become legitimate, I guess, as a professional, I suppose, because for online cartoons, anybody can do it. Anybody that has a scanner can just make a website, and that's why I guess there have been some negative attention in past years towards this form. But it is different for everybody. Some people think, well, when my audience is this high, then that's good enough for me, or you get mentioned in some publications or what
maybe,
have you.
Maybe
or,
it's more like different expectations of legitimacy. Like,
yeah.
Maybe if you have a million readers and you like some weird furry thing that is poorly inked, and you know, you're legitimate in your circle, but to other professionals, you might be like, boy.
I sought after... legitimacy, I guess. I that's part of the reason that I started submitting cartoons to the New Yorker, because I wanted an editor to say this is good enough or this is not good enough, because I don't have that online, and I kind of needed that verification, I guess.
It's a neat thing. Like, yeah. I was unedited for like 6.5 years, and then adapted a version for newspapers. Mm-hmm. And as constraining as that is, it was fun because I had a newspaper editor.
Yeah.
I mean, it almost ruined me, but at the same time, I got some really cool, like, grad school out of it.
Yeah.
You know? And that's where an editor is amazing. And maybe there should be a freelance editor for webcomics.
But, Kate, when you're in the New Yorker, will that satisfy your need for...
No, next she has to be on Barack Obama's fridge.
No, I didn't.
Personal White House.
Barack Obama. Caricature artist. Stephen Harper's fridge.
You really want to be on Stephen Harper's
fridge. I think cartoonists, I mean, creative types are often a little insecure, of course.
Why?
And I know, crazy. Newsflash, tweet that. I definitely am. And
I'm just autistic to that kind of thing.
But I feel like throughout my career, like I'm constant. There's certain like creators whose work I just admire and respect, that I feel like their validation has meant a lot to me.
That too, for sure.
But then you set yourself up for pain if they just irrationally dislike you.
Well,
or when you're hanging out with them and they get drunk and hit on you.
I don't know.
Let me tell you. Sorry about that.
I expected it to happen.
I just think your notion of legitimacy is completely linked to your motive for what you're doing. Why you are doing what you're doing.
Sure.
If you're doing it because you're picturing yourself being popular and rich, then obviously you're not going to think you're legit until you have a certain number of fans and you're making a certain amount of money. If you're doing it because you can't stop thinking about that funny joke you really wanted to tell, so you just wake up in the middle of the night and you tell the joke, then your legitimacy is going to come when five of your friends laugh at it.
Yeah.
Right? Last night,
my cats
at the Red Awards, Seth gave a really pointed speech just basically saying, do comics for yourself, not for other people. And I think that was like, I really enjoyed that. I know Kate.
Yeah,
Kate,
so you did it really.
It's funny, if you think about it though, who's more legitimate than Garfield? Do you want to be legitimate or not?
Do you mean James Garfield?
Yeah, Bob Garfield. From on the media? No, but you know what I mean? Like, who cares about legitimacy?
No one wants to be Garfield.
Yeah. Who's more legitimate than Family Guy?
Well,
you know,
I feel like I do my comics for myself, but...
Yeah. Awful.
You know, there are mileposts in one's career where you're like, oh, I did a comic cover of The New Yorker. And
yeah,
cool.
Exactly.
You know, like, that kind of... Also, it's the way then all of a sudden when I... Like, that New Yorker cover wasn't my holy grail. I was never considered myself an illustrator. But, man, when I was, like, fundraising for the school or I'd be introduced to a donor, they didn't say James Stern was the Golem's Mighty Swing or whatever it was. They'd be like, this is a New Yorker cover artist. And, you know, that just helped. And that, you know, you feel like you're all of a sudden moving in this other circle. And, yes, you know, whatever, does it make it easier to do my next graphic novel? Absolutely not. But it does put some wind in yourself in some ways, and I wouldn't want to discount that kind of stuff either.
Yeah, definitely. You always make comics for yourself. You do your work for yourself only. But when it becomes your job, you know, you want that kind of, you know, buoyancy, I guess.
What is that?
Like someone, validation. You want.
Right. And the validation you guys get, I mean, for whatever this huge ethereal online community is, but a lot of the validation, I would imagine, is when you guys come and talk and you meet people whose work you admire and you create this peers. I mean, that's so much of peers. Also validation is to be able to, you know, like last night, I have an hour-long intense conversation with Jim Woodring, and it's like, wow, like, this to me is like, not justifies making this book, but it's like I can't wait to finish my next graphic novel so I can, you know, kind of walk in these circles and hold my head proudly.
It does amaze you who you'll meet.
Yeah. A workplace comment from somebody that you admire is just as good as any kind of professional job that you do that, you know.
There's also the validation of like counting money.
Yeah, rich or poor, it's nice to have money.
Yeah.
Speak for
yourself. It's like, oh, I measure. I'm going to measure validation in swimming pools at some point.
If somebody would give me all the money, I promise you an interesting decade.
But, I mean, our culture puts such. It's all about money and who earns what, and every magazine's the top 10 earner, so I feel like, you know, that almost goes without saying because it's almost. You know,
I kind of feel like a sellout sometimes.
What was that?
I feel like a sellout sometimes just like having a store online.
No way, man.
What are you?
That's ridiculous.
People call me sellout.
It's a matter of finding a buyer.
Sellout. We've got about 5 minutes left, so I want to just give folks a chance to ask questions. You're here right at the beginning, so go ahead.
Thank you. Just to talk about validation and legitimacy, and of course, works like Dilbert and Garfield have been brought up. Is there a fear that the closer you get to your own personal sense of legitimacy, there is a worry that complacency hits? I mean, you look at certain works, is that not an issue at any time?
Not if you spend all your money.
I have a point where, like, if I consider it success, I'm going to get really weird. Like, you know, once I'm comfortable, then I'm going to get weird with it.
I think every artist who's, well, most of the ones that I know that are very good, generally, you know, always see room for improvement, so... No one's ever at their best. Everyone's always trying to do better, and because you never reach that carrot. Hopefully.
Well, that's called death.
there's never a point. I don't think that you plateau and go like, oh, I'm pretty good now. It's good.
Done with this.
Then Garfield jokes. That's it.
It's funny you say that you're going to get weird, because I think a lot of people, in their search for legitimacy, a lot of them say, when I'm a success and I can do anything I want, I'll be able to do all the really weird stories that I was doing when nobody was reading my stuff.
Yeah.
I've never seen that to them.
They're not very weird.
I'm wondering, are there some online comics that you guys like that you think maybe need a wider audience that you're really digging but don't have a lot of eyes looking at them right now? Speaking of social media, I guess.
Octopus Pie needs
Octopus
more.
Octopus Pie,
yeah. That's good.
Yeah. Just echo that.
No, I don't really read comics online. I've done, like, I really enjoy a book, and probably I'm missing out on a lot of great stuff, I'm sure, but I feel a little anxious and rushed when I'm in front of my screen because I'm on there for too much time.
You need an iPad, man.
Yeah,
one of these years, I'm sure it'll happen.
I think at this point, the question should be reversed almost, and is there a print comic that is not getting enough readers that you should really check out?
That's a wonderful segue, Kate, by the way.
Has anybody heard
right
of
after
the
this
Batman?
Panel, I'll be signing Market Day, my new graphic novel.
You probably have more readers than Batman these days.
I don't.
Probably.
Well,
yes.
That's a funny thing is, like, you know, Judge Parker is, you know, in how many newspapers?
That's good,
the world,
though.
And does it have as many readers as you do now, Kate?
I don't know.
It's people are forced to read it, though. It's just it comes with the paper, you know.
Yeah, but the newspaper strips still have massive audiences. They just don't have PayPal accounts.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that write to the editor if they get canceled, there's like 10,000 people in their 70s whose job it is to write letters to the editor.
Speaking of legitimacy, I think the day I really arrived was when people were screaming at me for replacing Kathy. Like, it was in one paper I replaced Kathy, and oh my god, they hated me.
So, I like you more.
Does everybody, I know, Kate, you have a book out of collecting your work, but do the other cartoonists have books out? So, like, there is a print component to for the dinosaurs.
The print's just, it's a different artifact. Like, you can go through, I go through my strips and I'll make a themed book and I'll recut the entire thing for a book, you know, and take the best of 3,000 strips.
But you all do print.
Yeah.
I think it's artifacts, yeah.
Rich, one thing I appreciated on your site was the fact that you had, like, chunks of strips you could just download.
Oh, yeah, just put up PDFs. Yeah. Why not?
People just do that. It works.
Well, my strips are like 4K, so it's pretty easy to do.
And it used to cost a lot. Like, bandwidth used to be really expensive, but now it's...
Well, that's why I designed a comic that's like 4K.
Yeah.
In 2000.
But it isn't... Yeah.
Anyone else? I think one more question.
No.
Well, can we, like, you want to ask what beers they have on tap?
I like this one.
They got Stella. I like Stella.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys for coming and joining and chatting.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was fun.